The Salt Box House by Janet McNaughton. Chapter 1. Katie woke to the growl of heavy equipment. Oh no, they'd started without her. She hurried into her clothes, then tore outside and up the hill. Mom and Nanny Grace were already there, and Uncle Lynn's family, their car packed for the mainland. With all the doors and windows pulled off, the cozy salt box house that Katie's grandmother had lived in for so long already looked abandoned. Katie's mother had put her arms around Katie's shoulders and hugged. The backhoe pushed. The old house groaned and creaked until it sounded as if it were crying for help. Katie wanted to cover her ears. Just when she thought she couldn't stand it, a wall collapsed with a dusty sigh. Soon, the house was nothing but a heap of broken boards. Poor old house, Nanny Grace said. Gone after almost 200 years. Uncle Len gave her a quick hug. Now, Mom, he said, don't cry. I couldn't bear to have the old house rot away. You know it's for the best. Tomorrow the trucks will clear away this mess. Next summer you'll have a nice big garden. He looked anxious to leave. I'll call when we get to Alberta. You'll feel better once you're settled in with Celia and Katie. Katie waved goodbye to her cousins, Bobby and Michelle, as Uncle Len's car disappeared. Then they walked back down the hill. Nanny sighed. This place seems empty, she said. Katie looked around. Nanny was right. Quinter Cove was as pretty as ever, the harbor still nestled into the hills so perfectly. People called it the teacup. Puffin still nested out on Bird Rock just as they always had, but Quinter Cove was not the same. Most people had lost their jobs when the fish plant and Avalon Station closed last year. Since then, half the families had left Newfoundland for the mainland. The empty houses gave Quinter Cove a sad, lonely feeling it had never had before. It wasn't like this when I was Katie's age. Nanny continued, this place was full of life then. The boats were always coming and going. It seemed like everything was new. Only new thing around now is that big grocery store in Cabin Air. And it's taking Mr. Verge's business, Katie's mom said. She glanced at her watch. I'd better hurry if I'm to keep my job. Nanny Grace laughed. Ed Verge won't fire you, Celia. You're the best worker he ever had. Well, I only got the job because the Porters moved, Katie's mother said. Katie said nothing. Betty Porter had been her best friend. Now she was just a pen pal. Katie's cousin Michelle had been the last girl in Quinter Cove in the same grade as Katie in the school at Avalon Station. And now she was gone. Katie had never been close to her cousin, but she knew she would miss Michelle. Don't look so gloomy, Katie, her mother said as she kissed her goodbye. We're getting fresh strawberries in the store today. Then Katie and I will make shortcakes after we straighten things away, Nanny said. Katie followed her grandmother into the house, remembering how frightened she had been when Uncle Lynn decided to move to Alberta a few months ago. Would Nanny go too? When Katie was little, Nanny had looked after her while Mum worked in the fish plant. Katie's father, Nanny's youngest son, had died when his fishing boat went down in a storm at sea, before Katie was even born. Katie loved Nanny Grace as much as she loved her mother, but Nanny had always lived with Uncle Len's family in the salt box house where she had raised her own sons. Nanny couldn't decide whether to go or stay. The idea that she might leave with Uncle Len's family had kept Katie awake night after night. Finally, one day, Nanny came to visit looking so serious. Katie was sure she had decided to go. Len says I shouldn't be living alone, she began, and maybe he's right. You know my heart's not perfect. Nanny paused. They all want me to go with them. She didn't look happy. Katie bit her lip but said nothing. Is that what you want? Katie's mother asked. Katie's grandmother shook her head. The more I think about it, the sadder it makes me. I've lived here all my life, Celia. If I had to leave now, I think I'd shrivel up and die. Well, you're welcome to live with us, Katie's mother said right away. Hooray, said Katie, throwing her arms around Nanny's waist. This is the best news we've had in months. Mom and Nanny Grace had laughed. So now Katie's house was filled with all the boxes and furniture Uncle Len brought down over the past few days. How would everything fit? "Let's get to work, Katie," Nanny Grace said. Katie took an old tin box from one of the cartons and opened it up. It was filled with old photos. She took one out. Nanny Grace looked over her shoulder. "That's your great-great-grandparents on their wedding day," she said. "Grandfather Edwin made this daybed for Annie, his bride." Nanny pointed to the old couch. It was in the old house ever since. Katie took another photo, this one of a solemn baby in frilly white clothes. Nanny Grace sighed. All these children were born in that old salt box house. Now the house is gone. Nanny dried her eyes. "Show me what to do, Nanny," Katie said. Unpacking might keep Nanny's mind off the salt box house. They began to clear the cartons out of the living room, but Katie didn't put the old tin box of photos away. She left it on a table by the TV so she could look at the pictures later. All afternoon while they worked, Katie pictured those Johnson babies lined up on the daybed in frilly white clothes. She tried to make them smile, but they wouldn't. Not today. By the end of the day, the house was still cluttered, but it looked better. When Mum came home, she carried a basket of fresh strawberries, but her face was grim. "Mr. Verge says he can't compete with the new store. Verge's is closing next month, and I'll be out of a job," she said. "We should have gone with Len." Chapter 2. Over the next few days, Katie's family talked about the future. Would they leave Quinter Cove? Mum thought maybe they should, but Katie and Nanny Grace had other ideas. "We belong here," Katie said. Nanny smiled. "That we do." Mum ran her hands through her hair the way she did whenever she was worried. "Well, employment insurance will give us enough to live on for now." "Don't forget my pension, Celia," Nanny Grace said. Katie's mother smiled. "Thank you, Grace." "So we can stay?" said Katie. "Now, Katie, nothing's really settled. Employment insurance doesn't last forever. If I don't find work, we'll still have to think about leaving next year." "Maybe the fish plant will reopen next year," Katie said. "No, Katie, the fish plant won't reopen anytime soon. I need to find new work." A few weeks later, Mr. Verge closed the store. When the shelves were almost empty, he started to give away the things he couldn't sell. "Anything take your fancy, Katie?" he asked. "Can I look in the loft?" He nodded. The loft of the old clapboard store was gloomy and smelled of mothballs. Mr. Verge had always let Katie and her friend Betty Porter play up here under the low roof beams on sunny summer days. Katie loved the loft. It was filled with things no one had ever bought, bright men's shirts and old frilly dresses. But she was disappointed as she looked around today. Plain dress-up was for little kids. There was nothing here for her now. Just as she was leaving, she saw three canvas bags tied to a ceiling beam near the stairs at eye level. She lowered them, opened one, and gasped with delight. Inside was wool in every color of the rainbow. She ran downstairs. "Mr. Verge, can I have the wool?" "Yes, child. Women stopped buying sheep's wool when they got that fancy acrylic yarn that doesn't shrink. I always liked real wool better myself. Take it and welcome." Katie carried the bags home in three trips, singing all the way. "What's that?" her mother cried. "You know the closets are all blocked up with your nanny's things. What were you thinking?" These days she always sounded angry. "It's almost as if she's another person," Katie thought. "It's just wool," she said. Tears stung her eyes. Mum noticed. "I'm sorry, Katie," she said. "Don't cry." She ran her hands through her hair. "We'll see if these bags will fit in the upstairs closet." The wool was put away, but the happy feeling it had given Katie was gone. It would be a long time before she wanted to see that wool again. When Katie went downstairs, she found Nanny Grace sitting on the old daybed, looking up the hill where her house had stood. Katie got the box of old photos and sat down beside her. "Tell me about this one," she said, thrusting a photograph of a baby into Nanny's hands. "This," she said, "is your great uncle Joshua Johnson, your grandfather's oldest brother. He spent every summer of his life fishing on the Labrador from the time he was 10 until he was 68. The summer after his father died, when he was just 21, he took the schooner to Labrador himself with a crew of boys. They got caught in a snowstorm coming back to Quinter Cove in the fall. The ship was driven off course. It took them 3 weeks to find their way home, living on hard bread, salt cod, and icicles they knocked from the rigging. Everyone had given them up for dead. Everyone except Joshua's mother. She set a place for him at the table every night. When he finally showed up 3 weeks late, she just said, 'Took your time getting home this year, my son.' And he said, 'Yes, mother, I did,' and sat down to his supper. And that was that." Katie took the photo out into the garden. She looked at the little baby with his big toothless grin, trying to picture him as a fearless grown-up, knocking icicles off the rigging of his schooner to make his tea. But she could only imagine a little baby climbing the rigging. That made her giggle. She was still looking at the photo when a truck pulled up and Mr. Verge's son, Lawrence, got out. "I'm going north to take a welding job for a year," he said. "My house will be shut while I'm gone. Dad thought maybe you could use this firewood. It will only rot if it stays outside my place." There was a big load of spruce logs in the back of his truck. "I'll get Mum," Katie said. When Katie's mother tried to pay Lawrence Verge, he laughed and waved her hand away. "Sure, the wood was free when I cut it last winter," he said. "This will keep down our heating costs," Katie heard her mother say to Nanny Grace. For the rest of the summer, whenever Katie's mother seemed worried, she took a bucksaw outside and cut the spruce logs into wood stove-sized pieces. She came back into the house, red-faced and sweating. But Katie noticed she always seemed happier. Chapter 3. Now that Katie's mother had no job, going for the mail was an important part of the day. Mildred Parrott, the letter carrier, drove from Avalon Station to fill the mailboxes in Quinter Cove around 11 every morning, and Katie and her mother walked over just after to pick up the mail. The mailboxes were near the wharf. It was a lovely walk down the crooked road to the teacup. The fields of Quinter Cove were covered in wild roses and slender blue irises. The air was sweet with the smell of raspberry canes. Dragonflies snapped and whirled in the summer breeze that blew sweet and warm from the land on sunny days, or cool and salty from the sea when it was cloudy. Halfway down the hill, Katie and her mother always stopped to check on the growing baby goats that the Button family were raising to sell to a dairy in Bonavista Bay. All summer, the kids kept climbing the fence or breaking it down. They ate cabbages and flowers out of people's gardens. One day, the little black one ate a tea towel off Mrs. Carter's back porch. The kids always crowded around the fence to take dandelion greens from Katie, bumping their heads under her hand for a scratch between the growing buds of their horns. Katie liked the way their hair felt, rough and wiry. She counted them while they pushed and shoved around her. 16, 17, 18, they're all here today. "I guess the tea towels of Quinter Cove can breathe easier," Katie's mother joked. "They get into so much trouble," Katie said. Her mother smiled. "Now you know why we call children kids." As they reached the mailboxes, Katie looked out to the mouth of the harbor. She could almost picture Great Uncle Josiah Johnson's schooner sailing home from the Labrador. How could she be happy anywhere else? Near the end of August, Katie's mother opened the mailbox to find a letter from the school board. "You won't get yourself into trouble at school." "Oh, you didn't get yourself into trouble at school last year, did you?" she asked, opening the envelope. But Katie knew she was joking. "Oh, this is interesting," her mother said, frowning a little. Her tone of voice caught Katie's attention. "What does it say?" "It seems there won't be enough children at school to make a whole grade 4 class this year, so you'll be going together with the grade 5s. "Oh, no," said Katie. "I know what you're thinking, Katie. Lots of people are worried the school might close in another year or two, but we'll just have to cross that bridge when we come to it." "That isn't it," Katie said. As soon as the words were out of her mouth, she wished she could take them back. But it was too late. "Well then, miss, what's bothering you?" Katie tried to think of a lie, but she never had been good at lying. She was stuck with the truth. "I'll be in the same class as Kenny Burry." "Oh," her mother said. "Cod liver Ken." She struggled to keep a straight face, but burst out laughing. "Sorry, Katie," she said, "but sweetie, you should have forgotten that by now." "Well, nobody else has. Anytime people see Kenny Burry and me, somebody always has to tell how he put the cod liver down my back." "It would have helped if you hadn't carried on the way you did. You screeched like someone was trying to murder you. People came running from all over the cove to find out what was wrong." "I was just little. Anyway, I didn't know what it was." Katie shuddered. Even now, it was so cold and slimy. Katie's mother smiled as they started back up the hill. "I think we'd all have forgotten by now if Mr. Hand hadn't been on the wharf with his new video camera that day," she said. Katie groaned. "Ugh, Mr. Hand, he's always dragging in people into his house to see the entire history of Quinter Cove since 1988 on video." After a moment, she said, "Do you suppose the teacher will notice I never talk to Kenny Burry?" "You don't? After all this time?" "Oh, Katie, that's silly." Katie frowned. "No, it's not. I don't speak to Kenny Burry, and I am not going to start now, just because we're in the same class." Her mother reached over and stroked Katie's hair. "Stubborn," she said. "Same as your father." And she got that faraway look she always did when she spoke about Katie's father. Katie knew better than to try to talk to her mother when she looked like that. Chapter 4. School started back and Katie's mom still had no job. There just weren't any. Now she stayed home all the time. This had never happened before. Would they have enough to eat this winter? Katie worried, but she didn't like to ask. The weekend after Labor Day, there was a food fishery. All the boats went out on the bay. Everyone seemed happy to be busy. "Come on," Katie's mother said to her. "Let's see if this old knife still works." Katie knew her mother had been one of the best filleters in the fish plant. When there were competitions, she usually won. Once she even went to St. John's to compete. Mom went down to the wharf and stood by the old splitting table. When people landed their catch, she filleted fish for them, just as she had at the plant. Everyone could see how happy she was to be working again. Lots of neighbors gave them cod. Nanny wrapped most of it up carefully and put it in the deep freeze. At least they'd have fish for winter. Now Katie had to get used to waiting for the school bus with no one her age to talk to. No one except Kenny Burry, that is. Katie stole a glance at him now and again while they waited. He seemed like any other 10-year-old boy. A little messy, a little rough. Not unpleasant or mean, but after not talking to him for so long, Katie didn't know how to start. Kenny didn't seem to either, so they went on saying nothing. Like always, the only other kids who waited for the bus were much younger. The littlest was Mrs. Carter's grandson. Katie didn't know him at all. He'd been born on the mainland while his father was in medical school. His parents had just moved back over the summer, and now his father was working at the cottage hospital in Old Pelican. The first day of school, the little boy's mother dragged him down the hill, screaming all the way. When the bus came, Katie and another girl from the shore had to hold on to him until the bus pulled away. "Mommy," he screamed, "Mommy! Don't go!" But as soon as his mother was out of sight, the little boy stopped crying. He spent the rest of the ride looking quietly out the window. The next morning, he screamed and cried all over again. After a few days, Katie decided to talk to him. She sat down in the empty seat beside him as soon as he stopped crying. "What's your name?" Katie asked. "Murphy," said the little boy. It seemed like a strange name, but Katie didn't let that stop her. "Okay, Murphy. Why do you screech like that every day?" He struck out his lower lip. Mommy goes away. But you like school, don't you? Murphy nodded. I thought so. Mrs. Butler is the nicest teacher in the school. Murphy smiled. She's taken us to Carbonara to pick our pineapple for Halloween, he said. Katie nodded. We did too when I was in grade one. All day Katie thought about Murphy. She watched him at recess. He seemed happy with the other kids. By the end of the day, Katie had a plan. Nanny, she said after supper, would you come to Mrs. Carter's with me? Yes, my dear, but why? Katie told Nanny about the little boy who made such a racket at the bus stop every day. I think I can help. I'd like to talk to Mrs. Carter first, but I don't want to go on my own. Just let me get my jacket, Nanny said. Mrs. Carter's house smelled wonderful as she opened the door. Gracie, she cried, just in time for a slice of gingerbread. Nanny smiled. I imagine you know Katie, don't you, Elsie? Of course, my dear, you're getting something big. What can I do for you? It's about your grandson, Mrs. Carter, Katie began. Dat child, me Ellen has to pry the creature off of her to go anywhere. If he'd been reared up here, he'd be a different boy, I can tell you dat. Katie didn't like the way Mrs. Carter talked about Murphy. She hadn't been sure how she felt about the little boy herself. Now she wanted to protect him. But he's happy at school, she said, and he stops crying as soon as his mother's out of sight. That's what gave me my idea, and Katie explained what she wanted to do. Tat might just work, Mrs. Carter said when she finished. You're right clever, you are. I'll tell me daughter, and you can try it out tomorrow morning. I hope Murphy doesn't mind, Katie said. Murphy! The child can't even say his own name. His name's Murray. After me husband, rest his soul, I suppose everyone in school thinks we named him Murphy, do they? She didn't wait for Katie to answer. Who in their right mind would give a child a name like that? People must think we're cracked. Now, have some gingerbread. When Katie and her grandmother finally stepped outside again, Katie had to hurry down the road so she wouldn't laugh without being heard. Murphy sounds like one queer little stick to me. He's a perfectly nice boy, Katie said. Well, I'll say Mrs. Carter and her daughter could use some help with him. This is good of you, Katie, Nanny said. For the first time, Katie wondered why she was doing this. When she spoke again, she answered her own question. I guess everyone who's left in Quinter Cove has helped us, with firewood and fish and all. Maybe it's my turn to help out. Nanny smiled in a way that made Katie feel warm all over. The next morning, Katie didn't go right down to the bus stop and said she marched up the hill past the empty lot where the old salt box house had stood until she came to a freshly painted house. The little boy was waiting for her. Murphy, Katie said, I've come to take you to the bus. Say goodbye to your mother. Katie tried to sound kindly, but firm, like someone who didn't expect any nonsense. Murphy's lower lip trembled, but he said exactly what Katie told him to. Goodbye, mother. He sounded as if he'd never expected to see her again, but he put his hand into Katie's. Now, Katie said, if we're quick, we'll have time to see what those goats are up to. The goats were just as happy to see Murphy as he was to see them. The little boy never looked back up the hill towards his house. For the first time that fall, he boarded the bus quietly, just like everyone else. Chapter 5. How did you know Murray wouldn't cry if you took him to the bus? Nanny asked on Saturday. Katie and her mother were helping Nanny take the vegetables in from her garden. They had pulled the carrots and cut cabbage. Now they were digging potatoes. I didn't, but I knew he didn't like it when his mother left him. I thought he might be happier if he left his mother instead. Nanny smiled. Well, it worked. Mrs. Carter phoned to say thank you. Her daughter would like to pay you something for taking Murray to the school bus every day. Katie frowned. I didn't do it for money. It's not a lot of trouble. I told her that, Katie, but going up and down the hill will get harder when the icy weather comes. Ellen is so relieved she wants to make sure she doesn't have to go back to taking Murray to the bus herself again. How much do they want to pay, Grace? Katie's mother asked. 50 cents a day, $2.50 a week. That's not much. Why don't you take it, Katie? Just so they know they can rely on you. If you think it's okay, Katie said. Her allowance was only $1 a week now. Katie helped collect the last of the potatoes. Soon all the work was done. "I never had time for a garden," Katie's mother said. "I suppose that's changed. I'm glad you'll be here to show us what to do next spring, Grace. Now, who wants to drive into Carbonaire?" Katie smiled. She loved the drive to town, even if it was only for groceries. This fall, everyone seemed to be having yard sales. Katie's mother always stopped at every one. Today, at the first sale, Katie looked around with new interest, thinking of the extra money she'd be getting. At a table of baby clothes, she found a box full of picture frames. "How much are these?" she asked the woman. "The picture frames? Oh, just a quarter each." Katie picked out two, a nice gold one and one that looked hand-carved. "What are you going to do with those, Katie?" Nanny asked on the way back to the car. "I want to frame some of the old baby pictures," Katie said. "We could hang them on the living room wall." But when Katie got home, she found the pictures didn't fit. They fell out of the wooden frame and sat crooked under the glass in the gold one. "I guess it wasn't a good idea after all," Katie said, putting the frames away. The weather stayed sunny. Nanny and Mum picked berries just about every day. When Katie came home from school, the berries were picked, cleaned, and packed away in the deep freeze. Katie never saw a fresh berry all fall. "Couldn't we have blueberry muffins?" she asked one evening. Her mother smiled. "This way we'll have pies and muffins all winter." Katie didn't say so, but she would have liked blueberry muffins now. One day, Katie came home with a memo from school. "There's going to be a bake sale on Friday," she said, "to make money for library books. I want to make blueberry muffins." "Well," Nanny said, "just help yourself to the ones in the freezer." Katie frowned. "Frozen blueberries make ugly muffins." Katie's mother laughed. "She's right. Frozen blueberries dye the batter purple. The muffins look funny." "Could you keep some out of the freezer for me tomorrow?" Katie said. "Nobody will buy ugly muffins, no matter how good they taste." "We will," Katie's mother promised. But when Katie came home from school the next day, there were no berries in sight. "Where are my blueberries?" Katie asked. "Your blueberries? Oh, the muffins, Katie. I'm sorry. We were so used to putting all the berries away, I just forgot." Katie sighed. "I'll pick some myself. Is there anywhere you haven't already picked over?" "We haven't been out by Church Pond path yet," Katie's mother said. "The berries are usually good up there. Make sure you're back before dinner." Katie picked up an old empty salt meat bucket as she left the house. She found the path by the white clapboard church, almost hidden by stand of spruce trees. Past the old graveyard, the trees thinned out. Katie picked a few blueberries as she walked up the grassy path, but not many. The berries grew thickest near the pond. As the path climbed, she could look down at all of Quinter Cove. It was so pretty. Katie wondered why she didn't come here more often. When she was almost in sight of the pond, Katie saw something strange ahead. It looked like a piece of raw chicken on a rock. It made her skin crawl. Suddenly, a small, sharp-faced animal popped up from behind the rock. Katie dropped her berry bucket and screamed. The animal disappeared. "What did you have to go screeching for?" a voice cried from the bush on the other side of the path. "I was finally going to get that mink lined up for a shot, and you screeched your head off." It was Kenny Burry. Katie felt herself turn bright red. "Why'd you want to blow the head off some mink anyway?" she said. "You could have killed me." Then she noticed the camera around Kenny's neck. "Oh," she said. Kenny grinned. "Guns aren't the only thing that shoots," he said. "But that would have been my first guess, too. My uncle's a photographer in Carbonaire. He bet me $5 I couldn't get a good shot of that mink last May. Been at it ever since," he sighed. "I was that close." "Sorry," Katie said. "The chickens looked creepy, and the mink scared me." "Well, I guess that makes us even for the cod liver," Kenny grinned again. "I don't see how," Katie said. "I yelled myself silly both times." Kenny shrugged. "That mink won't be back today. I'm going to have a mug up by the pond. Like some roasted chicken?" Katie looked at the chicken thigh on the rock. It wasn't very clean. No thanks, she said, but she didn't want to sound unfriendly. I'd have some tea, though. Hot chocolate, Kenny said. I've only got one mug, but that's okay. We can share. He handed Katie her berry bucket. Katie picked berries while Kenny made a fire on the rocks by the pond. When she was finished, he gave her the mug. You can have it, he said. Chicken and chocolate probably don't go together. After an awkward silence, Kenny spoke again. I liked what you did for that little fella, Murphy. Katie didn't say anything, but she smiled down into the cup of hot chocolate. From now on, it would be easy to talk to Kenny. Chapter 6. Everyone was surprised when Mr. Verge won a license to hunt moose, and even more surprised when he bagged his moose just a few weeks later. There's moose enough to feed 4 families, he said to Katie's mom. I thought at least Lawrence and his wife would be here, but now there's just me. You have to help me out. Katie's family helped him by filling the deep freeze with moose roasts and moose steaks and ground moose and stewing moose. Katie wasn't worried about food anymore. But now the berries were gone and the sunny days seemed to go with them. Day after day it rained until Katie almost forgot what blue sky looked like. Nanny bought paint and wallpaper on sale in Carbonaire. Mom and Nanny painted and papered every room in the house. Katie got used to walking around ladders and buckets. The mess was awful, but it kept Mom and Nanny busy. By the time the wet weather turned cold, the freezer was full. Everything was papered and painted. There didn't seem to be anything left for Mom to do. Nanny's soap opera didn't interest Mom at all. One night, Nanny's mother said, Grace, we've got all that wool upstairs. Why don't you teach me to knit? They pulled Katie's wool from the closet. Nanny smiled when she saw the beautiful colors. I'll get my knitting needles. Katie's mother made a scarf. Nanny Grace said, You learn fast, Celia. Let's try something a little harder. Katie's mother made a stocking. She worked at it steadily, but it took days. Sometimes she made mistakes. Then she had to pull the stitches out and start again. But Nanny praised her. This is good, Celia. See how neat and even the stitches are, Katie? Your mother's got a knack for knitting. Let's try 2 colors. Katie's mother learned to change colors and follow a pattern. Now the knitting needles flashed just like Mum's filleting knife used to in the fish plant. She hummed while she worked. Every few days, Katie found a new stocking when she came home from school. But she noticed something. Those socks don't match, Mum, she said. Mum smiled. That's okay. Soon stockings were everywhere. No 2 were alike. What was she doing? One day in November, Nanny was waiting for Katie when she came home from school. I was over to Mrs. Carter's for tea this afternoon, she said. A few of the other ladies were there as well. They were saying how lucky I am to have a granddaughter at home. Most of their children are on the mainland now. They talk about what a sad Christmas this will be. Most of the families can't afford to come home for the holidays. Then we started talking about the way Christmas used to be. That gave us an idea. We thought we might put an old-fashioned Christmas concert on in the community center, just like we did in the old days when it was the school. Katie poured herself a glass of milk. But we don't have enough kids for a real concert, she said. Nanny nodded. We talked about that, too. Some of us older folks would do recitations and songs. We want to have a bake sale and a craft table, too. We'll use the money to fix the swings by the swimming hole. Nanny's eyes were glowing in a way Katie hadn't seen for a long, long time. I think that's a great idea, Katie said. Wonderful, Nanny said. This will be some fun. A wet snow was falling when Katie and her grandmother walked down the hill to the community center for the first rehearsal a week later. It was only 4:00, but it was almost dark. They passed the empty pasture where the goats had played all summer. They were gone to the dairy farm now. It made Katie shiver to think of the long winter ahead. The darkness deepened. When they reached the community hall, Katie looked back up the hill. Some houses already had their Christmas lights on. They reflected on the water like colored stars in a deep black sky. Somehow, they made Katie feel warm again. But inside the community center, everyone kept their coats on. It was so cold that Katie could see her breath. I'll boil the kettle, Nanny said. I'm sure there's one in the kitchen. We'd be fine if we had a fire in the wood stove, Mr. Hand said. We'll just have to do what we did back when this was the school, Mr. Verge replied. Mr. Hand laughed. You mean bring our own firewood? That's a good idea, Mrs. Carter said, rubbing her hands together. Who lives closest? Kenny Burry put up his hand. Run home and get us a good armload of firewood for today, Kenny, please. Kenny nodded. As he left, Mr. Verge said, next week everyone can carry a junk of wood to rehearsal. He smiled, just like the old days. While Kenny got the fire going, everyone sat down around the stove with mugs of hot chocolate and tea to talk about the concert, all except the smaller children, who played with some old Christmas decorations Mr. Hand found in a cupboard. We could use the piano, Mrs. Carter said. Sure, we don't need a piano. I got my karaoke machine, Mr. Hand said, with a special Christmas tape. Mrs. Carter wrinkled her nose. That's not very traditional. Elsie, Mr. Hand said, you've got to move with the times. It's either that or move the whole show into the church and use the organ. Everyone groaned. The church needed a new organ. The keys were always sticking, giving the music unexpectedly long notes. The room was almost comfortable by the time the meeting was over. That settles it then, Mr. Hand said. We'll meet again next Tuesday to get to work. The little ones can sing Away in a Manger. The older children will sing Joy to the World and Angels We Have Heard on High. All the children will lead the sing-along. The older folks will do Christmas in the Trenches. And all I want for Christmas is my two front teeth. I think we need one more piece from the children, Nanny said. I'd like to hear 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. Katie, I think Murray could do a good job on that, don't you? Before Katie could speak, Mrs. Carter said, Grace, you must be joking. That child is useless. Katie glanced at Murphy playing tag with the other children. He hadn't heard, but it made Katie mad to think Mrs. Carter would talk about her own grandson that way. So she pushed aside any doubts she had about Murphy herself. I'm sure he could, Nanny. I'll help him, Katie smiled. They would show Mrs. Carter. Later, as they walked home, Katie said, did you really have to carry your own firewood to school? I'm surprised you never heard about that, Nanny said. The old school was something else. After supper, I'll tell you all about it. Chapter 7. Soon the concert was the most important event in the Quinter Cove Christmas calendar. No one was allowed to watch the rehearsals. Katie was afraid Mum would feel left out when she and Nanny left twice a week after school with their firewood, but Mum just waved her knitting needles at them as they left. The pile of odd stockings beside her chair grew bigger and bigger. Katie began to worry. Maybe being unemployed wasn't healthy for her mother. She tried to talk to Nanny about it on the way to rehearsal one day. Don't you think all those old odd socks are a bit strange? Nanny only laughed. Your mother's happy when she's knitting, Katie. I think she knows what she's doing. Everyone wanted the Christmas concert to be special, but it was harder than Katie had imagined. Mr. Hand's karaoke machine didn't work out. When the children tried to sing along with the tape, either their voices were all fuzzy and distorted, and even the Christmas tape sounded wrong. Too much percussion, Mr. Verge finally said one day. This just isn't working. Everyone agreed except Mr. Hand. Katie could see him struggling to keep his good nature. Well, he said after a long silence, we could move into the church and use the organ. That organ is worse than ever, Nanny said. She turned to Mr. Verge. Ed, suppose you play your accordion for the children. Mr. Verge shook his head, but slowly, as if he was thinking, I don't know what to say, Grace. I haven't touched it since Irene died. Didn't ever plan to pick it up again, to tell the truth. Granny didn't push him. Maybe the children can sing along. So they tried. But even from the middle of the choir, Katie knew their voices sounded thin and small. "Our singing isn't going to cheer anybody up," Katie told Nanny on the way home. "Give Mr. Verge some time to think," Katie was all Nanny said. Between rehearsals, Katie climbed the hill to Murphy's house to help him learn the poem. For someone too little to read, he learned fast. Katie was sure he was going to impress everyone, even Mrs. Carter. "Murray, that's wonderful," Murphy's mother said one night when he finished with no mistakes. "Katie, you've done a great job." Murphy's father spoke to him from behind his paper.
"Maybe your mother will notice," he said.
Murphy's mother frowned, but she didn't say anything. As the concert approached, Katie watched to see if Mr. Verge would bring his accordion to rehearsal. But he didn't. For once, Nanny was wrong. The afternoon of the concert, helped decorate the hall. Then came the dress rehearsal. Katie still thought the choir sounded too small, but when Murphy did his poem, it was perfect. Everyone clapped at the end.
"Well," said Mrs. Carter, "that was lovely, Murray, my son."
For the first time, Katie felt a big place in her heart for Murphy's grandmother. Katie was too nervous to eat supper. On top of everything else, her mother was acting strange. Even Nanny noticed. "You look like the cat that swallowed the canary, Celia."
"Maybe I am," Katie's mother replied.
"Run along now and get ready, both of you," she said. "I'll clear the dishes away and see you in the hall." By the time Katie got to the community hall, the butterflies in her stomach were turning cartwheels. She wanted to run away, but Katie gasped as she stepped inside. Two fresh-cut trees stood on either side of the stage, decorated with lights and tinsel. The hall was filled with the scent of fir and lit with the lovely low light of the Christmas trees.
"Oh, Nanny," Katie said, "who did that?"
Nanny smiled. "Mr. Verge and Mr. Hand wanted to give you youngsters a present for all the hard work you've done the past few weeks. Let's see if they need help with the craft table." Kenny Burry was already busy at the craft table, laying something out. In the low light, Kenny thought they were flat sheets of glass, but then she realized they were framed photographs. She picked one up. The surprised face of a mink stared back at her.
"You got your mink," she said.
"I did, just a week or so after you scared her away. My uncle gave me the $5 he bet me. Denny showed me how to frame my work. He says I'll need to know how if I'm going to be a photographer."
Katie heard the pride in Kenny's voice. She noticed how neatly the framed photos were. How did he do that? She wondered, remembering her try at framing the Johnson babies. But there wasn't time to ask. People were arriving. Katie hurried backstage to help get the little ones ready for Away in a Manger. She heard Mr. Verge say, "Put the chair out on the stage. Kenny, just to one side." Katie noticed the small black case in his hand. When the children were on stage, Mr. Verge took out his old button accordion. He played an introduction, and the little kids began to sing. The accordion music seemed to carry their small voices out across the hall. They sounded wonderful. When Katie's choir sang, she looked at the audience. The full hall had never seemed so empty. She could have named every person who was missing, but then she noticed her mother. She still looked happier than Katie could explain, and she carried a big canvas bag. What was she up to? Mr. Verge's accordion was a hit at the sing-along. People even step-danced in the aisles. Then finally it was Murphy's turn. Katie watched him from the side of the stage while his grandmother led him to the middle, parted the curtain, and placed him before the audience. Murray had been fine singing with the other children, but now, alone, he froze and covered his face with his hands. After a painfully long pause, Katie heard Mrs. Carter hiss,
"Murray, what's wrong?"
Murray didn't move, even when his grandmother nudged him from behind the curtain. Katie looked around on shore. Mr. Verge caught her eye and nodded.
"Out you go," he whispered. Katie found herself in the center of the stage alone with Murphy. He was right. It was scary. She didn't think she could get him to move, so she put her arm around his shoulder and said, "Murray learned a poem, and he said he'd say it for you now, wouldn't you, Murray?" Murray kept his hands over his eyes. Katie took a deep breath. After all these weeks of helping him, she was almost sure she could get through the poem alone. Almost. "'Twas the night before Christmas," she began. It wasn't until the third verse when out on the lawn there arose such a clatter that Katie heard Murphy's voice through his fingers. By the time a little old driver, so lively and quick, appeared, Murphy's hands were by his sides and he was reciting in a clear, strong voice. When Katie forgot a line near the end, Murphy helped her. When they said, "Happy Christmas to all and to all a good night," the crowd burst into wild applause. People jumped to their feet. "You just about brought the house down," Mr. Hand said, stepping past them as they left the stage. "Ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of our concert. There's tea and coffee and a bake table and craft table at the back of the room." "Wait," someone cried. Katie froze. It was her mother's voice. "Wait," she said again, and she rushed onto the stage. What was Mum doing? She opened the big canvas bag. Suddenly she looked shy, as if she just realized where she was. I made stockings," she said, "one for every boy and girl in Quinter Cove." She pulled one out and held it up. Nanny and Mr. Verge quickly gathered the children. Every kid got a Christmas stocking, even Katie. No two were alike. Everyone left the concert smiling. Chapter 8. All January it rained and snowed. There were still no jobs. "Will we have to move this summer?" Katie wondered, but she didn't ask. Asking might make it happen. Now that the Christmas stockings were finished, Katie's mother didn't seem to know what to do with herself. It was going to be a long, dreary winter. Then one night while Katie was doing her homework at the kitchen table, a knock came to the door. Katie peered past her mother's shoulder to see a strange woman. "Can I come in?" she asked. Katie's mother moved aside. "My name is Anne McGrath, and I work for the Crafts Development Association. I'm out here visiting some craft workers. Everywhere I went today, people showed me your Christmas stocking," she said. "I love that what you do with colors. You have talent. Have you thought about taking craft courses in St. John's?" "I'd like to, but I have no place to stay in St. John's. We can't afford it." By now, Nanny Grace was in the kitchen too. She frowned at Katie's mother's words, but didn't contradict her. Even Katie knew it was true. "That's too bad. I think you should learn to make sweaters." Nanny Grace smiled. "That's a good idea, Celia. I could teach you." "I'll lend you design books," Mrs. McGrath said. "If your sweaters are as interesting as those stockings, you could submit your work for the Christmas craft fair next November." "Next November? That's a long time," Katie's mother sighed. "I'll try sweaters, Mrs. McGrath, but we'll have to move by the end of the summer if I don't make any money." Nanny taught Katie's mother how to make sweaters. Once again, the knitting needles flashed and she hummed while she worked. Before the winter was over, she knew how to make her own designs. Her sweaters weren't like anyone else's. Knitted puffins flew over Bird Rock. Her knitted blueberries looked ready to pick. "Those sweaters are special," Nanny said one evening. Katie thought so too. As the snow melted, they got Kenny to take photographs of the sweaters and send them to Mrs. McGrath. The puffins returned to Bird Rock. New baby goats came to the pasture. Katie's family waited and waited, but there was no word from Mrs. McGrath. One day, Katie found Nancy Grace staring out the window up the hill where the salt box house had stood. Katie went for the box of old photos. "Tell me about this one," she said. Nanny smiled at the photo of a little frowning baby.
Now this, she said, was Nancy Johnson, born Nancy Emberley, my mother-in-law and your great-grandmother. She was the one who told me all the stories about the babies and where they grew up to be, and what they grew up to be. And she learned from her mother-in-law, Annie. Quite the storyteller, Annie was. Spent her whole life in Quinter Cove, never went further than Carbonaire. But she knew everything that had ever happened in this place. Like Mr. Hand, Katie said. Yes, like Mr. Hand. Now let's see what else I can tell you, Nanny said. Katie was beginning to feel that every baby and every photograph was her friend. Summer came, and there was still no letter from Mrs. McGrath. One day, Katie's mother said, "My sweaters must be too unusual." She folded the sweaters into the canvas bag and put them away. Katie felt a lump in her throat. "I don't want to be the last Johnson to leave Quinter Cove," she thought. That night, Katie dreamed about Verge's store. But instead of groceries, sweaters filled the shelves. Katie knew what to do. After school, she went to Mr. Verge. "Mr. Verge, could we borrow your store for the summer?" He laughed, but when Katie explained, Mr. Verge stopped laughing. "Let's talk to your mother," he said. "But Mr. Verge," Katie's mother said, "I can't pay you rent." "I don't need rent, Celia. Just pay the electric bill. You could sell other people's crafts, too." Katie's mother bit her lip. "Well," she said finally, "it might be a start." "Hooray," Katie said. Her mother smiled but said, "Don't get your hopes up, Katie. If the sweaters don't sell and I don't get into the Christmas craft fair, we'll have to leave." They called the store Quinter Cove Crafts. They sold Mr. Hand's wooden whirl gigs and Mrs. Carter's rag dolls, too. Katie worked in the store whenever she could. "Why don't you play outside?" her mother would say. "I like it here," said Katie. She dusted shelves and folded sweaters. On windy days, she put the whirligigs outside. They chattered in the wind like kittiwakes. Money trickled in. Enough money? Katie couldn't ask. She still watched for a letter from Mrs. McGrath. One day, Kenny came to the store with a box in his arms. "Could I sell my photos, do you think?" he asked Katie's mother. Katie's mother opened the box. "Oh, Kenny, they look so professional. Of course you can. Where should we put them?" "Out of the sunlight, Katie," Kenny said. "It fades them. How about over here? I brought a hammer and some picture hangers." While Katie watched Kenny work, she thought about the old baby pictures again. "How did you do that?" she asked. "You just pound the nail into the wall," Kenny said. Katie laughed. "Not that. How do you frame the pictures?" "Oh, that. It's not hard when someone teaches you. Why?" "We have all these old photographs. Nanny tells me stories about the people in them, but none of them are framed." "Why don't you give them to me?" Kenny said. "I think old photos need special mats, but my uncle would know. He's coming over tonight." Katie smiled. "That would be great." Katie ran to get the photos. When Kenny saw them, he frowned. "These are all just babies." "They're not just babies," Katie said, and she began to tell Katie some of the stories that Nanny had told her. When she finished, Kenny took the photos. "I'll see what Uncle Mark can do," he said. For the first time, Katie wondered about money. "Will it cost much?" "Your mother didn't ask for money when she took my work. My uncle says most people take a percentage." Nanny Grace and Mrs. Carter started a tea room in the store. Mrs. Carter's gingerbread brought more people. A reporter wrote about the store in the local newspaper. More tourists came. Katie helped out in the tea room when it got busy. Even Murphy came sometimes. "Murphy," Katie said one day, "could you put these dishes in the sink?" Murphy took the dishes, but he said, "My name's Murray." Mrs. Carter smiled. "Yes, me son, Murray is so your name." And she patted him on the head. Katie realized she hadn't heard Mrs. Carter say one mean thing about Murphy since the Christmas concert. "I better remember to call him Murray," she thought.
Kenny brought the photographs back a few days later. Katie hardly recognized them. "They look beautiful," she said. Kenny blushed with pride. "My uncle found these old frames in St. John's. I got picture hangers, too. Let's put them up." When Nanny and Mum came home from the store that night, Katie showed them the photos. 8 little babies in frilly white dresses peered out from their frames beside the window above the old day bed. Nanny hugged Katie. She didn't say anything, but Katie knew how happy she was. Everyone thought the store was a real success. Katie's mother was working on a new design, but she kept it hidden. "This one's a surprise," she said. One Saturday, they sold 9 sweaters. "Does this mean we can say?" Katie asked as they counted the money at the end of the day. Her mother sighed. "Soon the tourists will be gone. We can't get through the winter without the Christmas craft fair. I've been writing to your Uncle Len. He'll start to look for a place for us as soon as I say the word." On the way home, Katie scowled at the mailboxes. Everyone liked Mum's sweaters. Why didn't Mrs. McGrath write? Next weekend was rainy. The tourists stayed away. All this work, Katie thought, just end up living in some city full of strangers. She hardly noticed the car stopping. "Oh, hello," Katie's mother said. Katie looked up. It was Mrs. McGrath. "I was away taking courses. No one opened my mail while I was gone. We love your sweaters. We want you to enter the best new product category at the Christmas craft fair. Do you have any designs?" Katie's mother smiled. This was a secret, but she opened her bag. There on the half-finished sweater was Nanny's salt box house. "This is special," Mrs. McGrath said. "Yes, it is," said Nanny Grace. Katie pretended not to see the tears. They were happy tears. After supper, Katie and her mother walked out along the land wash to look at Bird Rock. "This means we can stay, doesn't it?" Katie asked. "If you're sure that's what you want, Katie, it will be a struggle. You know that, don't you?" Katie nodded. "That's okay," she said. "I'd miss everyone if we went away, even Mrs. Carter. As long as we're in Quinter Cove, I can picture all the things that happened in the stories Nanny tells me. I can't imagine living anywhere else. I think I'd even miss the goats." Katie's mother laughed. Later that night, as Katie fell asleep, she saw all the Johnson babies in frilly white clothes, but they weren't in their picture frames. Instead, they were lined up on great-great-grandfather Edwin's daybed, all together. Everyone looked happy. Everyone smiled a big, toothless smile. And at the end of the book, there is a note about the story. It says, "Fishing always played an important role in Newfoundland, and cod was always the most important fish. This suddenly changed in the early 1990s when the government of Canada realized the cod stocks were disappearing. Not everyone agrees on the reasons why this happened, but overfishing by big factory freezer ships played an important role. In July of 1992, the northern cod fishery was completely shut down. This was called the moratorium. Over the next few years, fish plants across the island closed, and about 8,000 people left the province for other parts of Canada. Many of them were leaving places where their families had lived for generations. Many of them did not want to go. Some people managed to find new ways to earn a living in their home communities, and some fish plant workers, like Katie's mother, retrained to become craft workers." The end.